Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with regional and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
As the year 2025 draws to a close, I'm going to take a look back at local authors who published books this year that you might have missed. My guest is Chico philosopher and columnist Dan Barnett. He teaches philosophy full-time at Butte College, and for the past 38 years has written the weekly Bibliophile book column for the Chico Enterprise Record. The focus of his column is on local authors and those who are coming to visit our area. Dan Barnett, welcome.
Well, it's good to be here once again.
Well, I mentioned that you have been writing your column for 38 years.
Yeah.
So you started just shortly before I started at this radio station.
I was 12 years old back then.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But you were on radio before that.
Yes.
So you are quite comfortable behind a microphone, no?
Well, I don't know about that, but it's fun.
Okay. Now, I wanted to ask you about books this past year, but you also have some tips for I have a piece of paper here that says Bibliophile 2025.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Well, I'll tell you in a moment, but first, I want to really promote the idea of slow reading. And many of our listeners know about Substack, which is a place where people blog. And more on Substack, there are various slow reading programs. One of those is Simon Hazel's Footnotes and Tangents. So if you go to substack.com, you can find out more.
Excuse me, Dan. When you say slow reader, I have been excelled at that my whole life. I have been a slow reader because I enjoy reading. I read slowly. So what is that what you mean when you say this as a way of helping people read slowly?
Exactly. So here's the example. I'm almost finished with Tolstoy's War and Peace. It's over 1,000 pages, as everyone knows, big, giant Russian novel. It turns out there are about 365 chapters. And so what Simon Hazel has done, Footnotes and Tangents, every week he says, all right, read 7 chapters. And then he creates a podcast and a blog that not only summarizes each chapter, but has links to the character development in case you forget the thousands of characters that Tolstoy introduces.
You know, that's why I like a paper book. I know you can get PDFs, but I like to be able to flip back. Now, who is that character? And flip back and find that character. But he's figured out a way to help you with that.
And that's how you do it, with these links. And then he has some tangents, some related sorts of things. War and Peace, in part, is about the Russian War of 1812. Napoleon invades, and there's all kinds of historical backgrounds and so forth. And so I've been reading on my iPhone a chapter a day for almost a year. It ends on December 31st. And that's the slow read. So you get through War and Peace in a whole year, and it's a wonderful thing to wake up to in the morning and find out what's happened to Pierre and some of the other main characters.
Now, you're inspiring me because I think to read Tolstoy would help us understand our lives today.
Yes. Yeah. And in fact, because I'm a philosopher, he has an interesting philosophy of history that actually is against the idea of the so-called great man theory of history that Napoleon was this genius who came in. He does not have a high regard for Napoleon. But more generally, what he says is you have to look at the vast number of small little choices that everyday people are making. And that's how history has to focus. That if you say, well, it's all done by these great people who make these incredible decisions, that's really not, says Tolstoy, how history actually unfolds. It's really a fascinating book. So you have a romance, you have a number of romances, you have battles, and you have philosophy. And what better combination?
My guest is Dan Barnett. He writes the bibliophile column for the Chico Enterprise Record, so he reads books by local authors, just as I do, and we both are bibliophiles in that we love reading. When you're telling me this about history that we did not know, I have more and more want to know what was the real history, because what I was taught in school, I learned, is taught by the people who want to be the good guys, and those people are the bad guys. And so I think people would really benefit from rereading Tolstoy, reading Tolstoy for the first time.
Yeah, and there are good guys and bad guys in Tolstoy, of course, but it's a different take. And the idea of slow reading, and there are many Substack blogs available for all kinds of slow reading, but Simon Hazel's Footnotes and Tangents is the one, and it's like $50, something like that, and you get his whole reading list and all the links to all the characters, but really helpful for those of us who've said to ourselves, one of these days I'm going to tackle that big giant novel. This is a way to do it. And that brings me to a kind of imaginary bibliophile bookstore. One of the great things about bookstores, and you know this, Nancy, is when you go into a bookstore and, you know, sometimes you just go in and you look around and you just wander, and that's fine. Not all who wander are lost, says Tolkien. But sometimes you're looking for something more specific, maybe a specific title, but maybe also a specific kind of book, maybe a children's book that teaches a story. Maybe you're looking for a science fiction book that is about other worlds. Maybe you're looking for a history book that's about the Russian War of 1812. And it's really wonderful how bookstore employees can give some specific references. So I've looked at some of the columns that I've written and made some specific references, and Nancy will read the request as if she's coming into the imaginary bibliophile bookstore, and I can let her know the reference. So we'll see if this works out.
Okay, you ready? I have my assignment, teacher.
You got your assignment. Okay. Here we go.
I'm looking for a book that features overland migratory gophers in West Chico, a peach pit conspiracy, and a nightmare on Avocado Street.
Boy, we have a lot of books like that, but let's see. The one I would recommend is a book by Jeremy Miller called Slugs Don't Eat Arugula.
Arugula. I happen to be a fan of arugula. Yeah, sorry.
So I said, what did I say, arugula?
Well, arugula.
Arugula.
Yeah, I happen to love arugula. I'm a fan of leafy greens.
Okay.
Sorry.
You probably like kale, too, right?
Oh, I do love kale.
Okay.
And you heard about that gravestone? I ate all that kale for nothing.
Okay. Slugs Don't Eat Arugula, Tales of Whimsy, Woe, and Wisdom from the Kitchen and Garden. Fun little book. Compile some columns that Jeremy has written previously. And yes, there is a peach pit conspiracy. You'll have to look at the book to find out more.
Well, now, since you mentioned bookstore, I want to say we have sources of books here, and the bookstore, that's the name of the bookstore, carries local authors. So I visited the bookstore. Mir Hughes.
They're actually sequestered in a locked room, those local authors. Have you noticed?
And
let one out every so often.
Well, she did have to look for it because I asked Mir, I said, do you have a book called Core Samples by Philip Hemingway?
Yes.
And she looked for it and she says, well, we've got such a hodgepodge.
Ooh.
And the reason I emphasize the word hodgepodge is because when you reviewed this book, Core Samples by Philip Hemingway, you use such a handy word that I think listeners would like to hear. Dan, what's that vocabulary word that that Muir could have used? She said hodgepodge.
A gallimaufry. And actually, that's not my word. That's Phil's word. He and I were colleagues at Buick College back in the last millennium. And he taught classes well, and I taught classes well. And so he sent me Core Samples, which is really a compilation of—
That's the title of his book, Core Samples.
—of his poetry. And since I have a poem marked, would you like me to read one?
Yeah, and I'll just remind people that this author, Philip Hemingway, he's retired now, but he had a B.A. in French and English and M.A. in English from what became California State University. And he has worked various jobs, but Butte College hired him to teach English and French, and he did that for 31 years.
Yeah.
So he taught English, and here he has a collection of poems, and you're going to honor us with one of his poems.
There are several sections. This is called articles. These are material artifacts from Merle Lowell Hemingway, and it's Hemenway, H-E-M-E-N-W-A-Y, not Ernest's last name. His grandfather, and as who passed away, and so there's all this stuff. What do you do with this stuff? So he wrote a series of poems about these various things, and one of them is called His Tires. His Tires. So here it is. During the cleanup, they turned up in the tall grass behind the barn as if settled there by an explosion, a careless joke on his 2 acres, 42 tires left through the years, some of them pre-war, my father said, a quick lesson in rubber history, all as bald as the old man's head. Uncle Stogie brought in a backhoe, shoved the black evidence of mobility into a deep trench he dug out back. In keeping with Grandpa's own traditions, though no one buries a tire for long, it comes back to you like an old song.
This is my guest, Dan Barnett. He's reading from a poem from a book called Core Samples, written by a colleague of his at Butte College, Philip Hemingway. And you have this this collection of poems, mm-hmm. and you just gave an example of that. Do you have anything else you want to add about this author before I ask you to find me another book?
I do. I want to read another poem. This is much more serious.
I might mention, too, that you twice in your review, you say the word New Year, and you and I get together at New Year's to look back at local authors. So I thought that was also appropriate.
Yes.
So what's the other poem that you want to read?
Well, it's called New Year's Day.
I didn't know that was going to be the poem you read, by the
way.
Well,
here it is. It's a little long, so it's about 45 minutes long. So I'm kidding. On the new year, the day standing sharp and clear in invitation to a California walk, despite the glassy wind nipping hard from the north, we succumbed, the dog and I, to a basal need for motion. And from the road's edge, I saw back among bare walnut trees the swoop and slash of blue toes, a girl in her rope swing, flying barefoot in wide flashing arcs as she broke winter's first law, her radiant joy, the purest of all potions against the cold. That's part one. Part two.
You didn't quote that whole poem in your review. You reproduce this in your review of
That's
the
right.
book.
We only have so many column inches in a print newspaper.
Yes, and yes. We only have so many minutes in a radio interview.
I got to read part two, though. At 95, his corded neck had shrunk deep within the drooping collars of his perpetually wood shirts. I see him sitting on his front porch, his south-facing shelter bunkered against the gusts of the north wind. Certain of its intentions, he moved 20 miles to a foothill town, red dirt hillocks thwarting the chill assaults on the frail mechanisms of his life. He is my maternal grandfather, years gone. But he says what he always said, as if caught in the sudden terrors of some new assault or discovery. Over there, where you live, you know that damn north wind will kill you. On days like this, the air having resolved itself to the point of a well-honed palatine dagger, I know I will never shrink. all the odd couplings of my people, the gurglings of great, great someones as they agitated the nuptial straw. Command me to tables heaped with fat chops and steaming spuds. And so, at some distant new year, I will walk all the dogs I have ever known. I will step out of my ancient shoes. I will find a rope swing and work myself into a spectacular blue-toed arc. And on the apogee of a January 1, I will howl once and expand forever.
This is my guest, Dan Barnett, book critic for the Chico Enterprise Record, who writes a weekly column, Bibliophile. And Dan and I will be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, Dan Barnett, who teaches philosophy at Butte College and has been writing the weekly Bibliophile column for the Chico Enterprise Record. And he has this imaginary bookstore.
Yes.
And they have whatever I want. So
yes.
I'm going to walk in this bookstore. And
Do you want the address so people can send cash? Maybe not.
This is public radio.
Oh.
Okay, Dan, I'm looking for a book featuring a bad seed son and a game warden that involves the Butte County Jail and Far Eastern Russia.
Ooh. This is Steve Callen's book. It just so happens that we have it on the shelf. And indeed, it's called The Outlaw from Newville, a Game Warden Henry Glantz novel. And you interviewed Steve.
I did. And his wife is very supportive. She's kind of his agent and does the, So they're a couple that they love kayaking. They love the outdoors, as you might expect from a retired game warden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this was how much was based on his experience. I think some, because
he's the son of a game warden, and he was a game warden himself.
Yes, and there's details in there that maybe only game wardens would actually know. But it goes beyond just game wardenship that, an international incident is involved. So thank you for asking. I just happen to have it on the shelf.
Well, I have another question for you,
okay.
Dan. If I'm looking for a book by a former Chico High student body president about a boy who starts to glow involving a librarian from Uganda.
This is Bobby Baird, and I can feel the glow already. In fact, over there on the shelf, it's warm, and The Nimbus is the title of the book, and it keeps everything else warm.
But not everybody believes that, Dan. Who believes
Not everybody can see it.
No.
When Bobby came to Barnes & Noble for a signing, I got to be there and so sat with him. And it's really interesting because people came right up, and I was at the table and he was at the table, and I was invisible. It was so gratifying to see friends and family come up, and Bobby just, he had a wonderful time literally embracing so many people that had come to hear him talk about this strange experience called the Nimbus.
He also was written up in the New Yorker I don't know if you knew that.
Yes, yes.
But his name, they don't review many books, but Bobby Baird got his book, The Nimbus, mentioned in The New Yorker.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thank you for asking. But, you know, it's wonderful that I just happen to have these books available. Yes. Got another one?
Yeah. I'm looking for a book about a polygamist man with 14 children who was before he was murdered, he delivered thousands of babies.
Gee, we have so many books on that. Let's see. Oh, here it is. It's Jerry Allred's book, and it's called Hideaways, Within and Outside My Polygamist Family. And you interviewed him as well.
Oh, I did, yes. And his wife, because she's also a writer.
And the interesting thing is that Jerry talks very fondly about his father.
Yeah.
And it's a nuanced view of what it means to grow up in a polygamist family. And basically, as a child, it was all about hiding because the regular LDS church was against them. And the feds were against them, and they had to hide a lot.
Yeah.
That's
imagine
hideaways.
Growing up, yeah, imagine growing up with your dad, and his dad was, he had his own career.
Yes.
That was quite a story. But what about if I'm looking for another health professional story? I'm looking for a story that shows a disgraced dentist can become a successful forensic odontologist in San Francisco.
Oh, we have so many books on odontology. let's see. Here's one. It's from Mike Paul, who happens to be a retired dentist and a pilot.
So and he knows whereof he speaks.
He knows whereof he speaks. And his crowning achievement is a series of books that have a dental flavor, so to speak.
Oh.
Not bad breath, just a dental flavor. And really, this is about Rick Rose, who, well, the description is he's a handsome 37-year-old forensic odontologist working for San Francisco's chief medical examiner, who happens to be beautiful, and her name is Dr. Alexandra Keller. And Rose has been given a second chance because he lost his dental practice in the novel due to imbibing too much. But he is a great odontologist, a forensic dentist. And this novel is called The Head Case. And it does feature a head separate from the body.
And since it is a mystery thriller, we
yes.
don't want to give away any secrets.
No.
Because Mike Paul, has written several in this series. I'm sure he's working on another one now.
Yeah.
So
well.
We will stay tuned. My guest is Dan Barnett. He writes the Bibliophile column, a weekly column in the Chico Enterprise Record. He's been doing that for 38 years,
yeah. Oh, what's the difference between a literalist and a kleptomaniac?
Oh, my goodness.
Because
okay.
we're talking about books and reading, and
yeah.
you know, people read literally. So what's okay. the difference between a literalist and a kleptomaniac?
I'm going to have to say I give up.
Well, the literalist takes things literally, and the kleptomaniac takes things literally.
Well, if you're going to be a punster,
is
which
this
you
on?
Are,
oh.
Yeah. You're a punster. You tell me you won an obscure award for your knowledge of Alexander Graham Bell.
I did.
Are you going to come up with that pun?
You're going to read it.
No, I just, you told me you won an obscure
award. A very obscure award.
For your knowledge of Alexander Graham Bell.
That's right. Yeah. And very few people know Alexander Graham Bell. And I was awarded this award because of my understanding of him. It's the Nobel Prize.
K-N-O-W.
Yeah.
The K-N-O-W Bell Prize.
Yeah. You got to do that for radio.
Yes, spell you it do, out. Because you, it's easier written. So that's an example of the puns that you incorporate into your writing. You're incorrigible.
Yeah, and people say, I ought to be disincorporated. You know what I mean? Yes.
Well, I mentioned that Dr. Paul, Mike Paul, is writing a series of thrillers.
Yes.
So he's written lots of books. Now, there's another local writer that, oh, gosh, I've even lost count of how many he has written. And he started out as a photographer. And so if I come into your bookstore, Dan, and I tell you, I'm looking for a story that confirms the widespread belief that love can indeed blossom in a French cemetery.
Well, that happens so often. People go to French cemeteries and, you know, love blossoms and blooms. And I'll tell you. So Doug Keister, who is a premier photographer as well as a novelist and a fact book writer, especially focusing on the symbology found in cemeteries.
And not obscure facts. He picks out things that are fun that would help you win a trivia contest because when he includes a couple of paragraphs. So I look at his book again and say, well, what did he say about this famous person buried in Père Lachaise in Paris, for example? But yes, excuse me for interrupting.
Well, I'm glad you pronounced it because I'm not Frenchified, but it's the first garden cemetery in the world. It was established in 1804. Long about when I was born, something like that.
And you never exaggerate.
No, I don't. I've told you a million times I don't exaggerate. Nancy, come on. The resting place of Jim Morrison, did you know that?
Oh, you kidding? I went there. And and you have to, they had to put protective, not glass, around his grave because so many people wanted to go there. And any time I talk to anybody about Père Lachaise, they mentioned his gravesite because that's where, even though many other famous people are buried there, he's the one they want to see.
And Phèdre is the novel. That's the name of the main character, Phaedra, since we're on radio.
Yes.
And you can come to my imaginary bookstore, but you could also get it through physical means.
Yes.
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 Well, suppose now I'm looking for a children's book.
Yes.
And I'm assuming, Dan, you have children's books in your imaginary bookstore.
Yes.
But I'm looking for a kid's book that features bulldogs, hamsters, and a young boy.
Hmm. Well, bulldogs, hamsters, and a young boy. Bulldogs?
And this author has also written some other books.
Hamsters. I think Josh Shelton would fill the bill. He has a book called Just Be, and it does have a bulldog in it and a young boy and what else? Hamsters. Yeah. You interviewed him.
I did, yes. For a previous book also. He has written, and of course, children's books, the illustrations are just, I just so enjoy the illustrations in children's books. Speaking of which.
Well, hold up the pictures so people can
Well, I will.
Imagine.
I'm holding up to the microphone.
Oh, I like that.
There's a doctor in town, L.K. Wong, who took many, many years writing a book that he calls Too Busy for Bed.
I like this book.
Oh, I did too. And when you talk about slow reading, I read Dr. Wong's book very slowly because they rhyme, and some of them I wanted to sing when I read his book.
Well, what happens when, and I'm sure this is very rare among those who have young children, but let's say they're so wound up, as we used to say, that they don't want to go to bed.
Yep.
And their imagination is running wild, and they are running wild throughout the house. And the book talks about that. It's the main character says, "Did you say bed? Well, that clock is wrong. It should say time for fun, for steaming, tipping, pouring joy. My evening's just begun." She's pouring all kinds of tea from the tea kettle. And I think some parents could identify with that.
Oh, I'm a little teapot, short and stout. Here's my handle and here's my spout.
Yes.
Didn't you learn that, Dan, when you were a kid?
Grandma told me about it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so there's the itsy-bitsy spider climbing up a spout.
Oh, yeah.
It rains, it pours, an old man snores. I'm wet, I whoosh right out. And so this is taking a bath, right? And so you'd think a bath would just calm everybody down, but oh, they want to play on. At least the character, the little girl in the book, I'm a monkey jumping on the bed. No monkeys, you declare. Okay, then, now I'm jumping. I'm a jumping cow. The moon's just over there.
Might mention that Dr. Wong had an illustrator, Amy Lee. And, for example, if you are talking about an itsy-bitsy spider, of course, you expect to see a little spider mm-hmm. in the book. And the illustrations are just so wonderful. So this is a book, too, that you would be you'd have to read slowly.
Slowly, yes. And finally, there's a kind of warm blanket that the little girl begins to kind of snuggle up to, but it's really an octopus. That's what she is imagining, all wrapped up. I'm safe and snug, a bug inside a rug. And then she begins to dream.
Well, you know, that octopus, I think that's a little stuffed toy.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think I'd want to snuggle with an octopus. But, yeah.
You'd be well-armed, though, I think.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Dan, people are going to think we rehearse these puns because you come up with them just on the spur of the moment. My goodness. Anyway, that book is entitled Too Busy for Bed. It's written by Dr. L.K. Wong. So we're taking a look at books and supposing that, well, maybe I come into your bookshop and I'm looking for maybe a book about loyalty edited by a philosopher. Imagine
Ooh.
A philosopher
yeah.
who makes loyalty more complex than a reader might imagine.
Right. Troy Jalimore actually is the chair of the philosophy department over at Chico State.
And a very talented and award-winning poet.
An award-winning poet. Let's see. He won the National Book Critics Circle Award.
And to the surprise of other poets.
That is correct.
Who is this guy, Troy Jalimore?
I tell you. And so he mingles philosophy with poetry. And Plato, the philosopher, didn't think you could really do that. And so Troy is outstanding in that regard. He's outstanding over there. But he edited a book called The Virtue of Loyalty. And he has a chapter in there, but other writers do too. 10 chapters, in fact. And all of these writers address whether loyalty can motivate and justify actions which have horrific consequences or which are inherently morally awful. In other words, if you are a loyal person to a fault, does that justify an immoral action? Does loyalty supersede your immorality? And Jalimore, just to, you know, spoiler alert, says no. But it's not so easy sometimes when you're very loyal to a friend and your friend asks you to tell an untruth, for instance, for them. It's really hard to decide. So that's how he problematizes things. It's this idea of loyalty is a virtue.
Is that a real word, Dan? Problematize?
Yeah, it is now. loyalty is a virtue, but a very, very complex one. And so he says, a loyal friend need not always overlook your imperfections, but they will not seize immediately upon them as a reason for abandoning you and ending their relationship with you. So this is a different way of looking at loyalty. That is, what I just said was being asked by your friend that you're loyal to tell an untruth. this is an example from your perspective. When your friend asks you that and you're loyal to a friend, you want to say, well, there goes the friendship. You know, I'm not going that far. And so what do you do? Do you just throw away the friendship? And Jalamore says, well, it's more complex than that. You've got to really think through these things. You don't abandon the person because they're trying to use the loyalty you have toward them. So he says the greatest expression of patriotism might lie in refusing blind devotion or unconditional subservience. And so there's a way to push back against this ultimate loyalty that your friend may take advantage of or want to take advantage of.
Do you know, from what you've just been describing, if I'm listening, I think, you know, I'd like to take a course in philosophy. If this is the kind of thing you deal with, I'd like to sign up for a course in philosophy. And by George, I don't have to convince you of the value of philosophy as a subject to study.
Yeah. An author, American philosopher, once said, philosophy is everybody's business. And so we all are really thinking philosophical thoughts on occasion. And what philosophy does is help hone those thoughts.
My guest is Dan Barnett. He is a philosopher. He teaches philosophy at Butte College, and he also writes the Bibliophile column, a weekly column in the Chico Enterprise Record. After a break, Dan Barnett and I will continue our conversation about this year's authors. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with columnist Dan Barnett, and we're talking about the books that were published in 2025 that you might have missed by local writers. Now, he has presented the idea that he has this imaginary bookstore,
yes. Yeah.
And I'm going to come in looking for a book, and Dan, the book I'm looking for by a retired Air Force Chief Master Sergeant who grew up in Orland and who learned lessons in leadership from cows.
That's right. Let's see. Oh, there's so many of cow leadership books. there it is. It's Dave Nordell's book. And he says the cows of Orland made him wise. His book is called When the Cows Lie Down, The Reason People Quit You, Their Leader. And this is very interesting because when you are called on to lead a group, what are the signs that you can see that the group is not cohering as it should and is not really listening to you, their leader?
Well, you know, I couldn't help but notice a lot of times that cows are all, as a group, will face the same direction or will all lie down at the same time. And so his book is very interesting.
Right.
You can learn from cows.
When a storm comes, they kind of gather together and a leader may be telling themselves, well, everything is just fine and we're going to get through this and so on. And if you notice that the cows are lying down, then a storm is coming, and you may not have recognized that. So every leader should have at least one well, probably two cows, don't you think?
Well, if you live in Orland, that would be easier than if you live in a city.
Yeah, I'm trying to milk that for everything it's
got. Oh, my
goodness. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, let's get real here.
What?
And there's a title of a book that I think would shock people. Is she serious? The title of the book is Outer Space is Closer Than Antarctica. How can that be possible, Dan?
I don't know. Tell me.
Well, the full title of the book is And Other Things I Learned While Falling in Love at the Bottom of the World. And this book is not only interesting because of that information, but she also illustrates her book.
Ah.
This is Michelle Ott, O-T-T, Michelle Ott. And she, I don't think I would be fond of living in such a cold climate, but she really liked it so much, she went back more than once.
Well, I ought to have that book in my bookstore, but I don't, so I'm going to take it from you as soon as this is over.
Well, you can go to the bookstore.
What?
Yes, and Josh or Muir will show you that they have Outer Space is Closer Than Antarctica. And this is an illustrated memoir by Michelle Ott. And it's particularly helpful to have the illustrations because she gives some scientific facts that you think, what? I don't know if I understand that.
Oh.
But the illustration, oh, I look at the illustration, I can understand it. So.
One of my relatives was, her name was Arctica. It was my aunt.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. That's
and you're
as
not
close
punning,
as.
You're not punning at all, are you, Dan?
No, it's just a snow job. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Antarctica, that she was a wonderful person.
Yeah, I'm sure she was.
Yeah.
And
she came
was
from
married
Australia.
Your uncle. I thought you were going to get around to her uncle. Your uncle, rather.
No, she came from Australia, down under. So.
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about if I'm looking for a book about a garden in paradise with connections to Bilbo and Frodo Baggins? What in the deep? Ever you possibly have a book about this kind of garden?
Oh, there's so many. Well, oh, how about this one? Matt DiStefano is a publisher in Chico. His company's called Quire.
So, potential writers out there, if you are looking for a publisher, you might consider. Oh, we have a local publisher.
Yeah, and Matt is very much. Well, he considers himself a kind of hobbit. He's a little tall for that, but he has some good friends in paradise, and together they went together and bought some land, and they're putting a garden with fruit trees and so forth. And Matt is really enamored of the Shire. And the book that he's published just recently is called Letters from the Shire on Tolkien, His World, and a Better Understanding of Ours. And he's written some previous books on Tolkien, and these are letters that he's received from readers, and he is responding to them. Some are kind of humorous, quirky, and others are theological and so forth. His previous books are called The Wisdom of Hobbits and then The Mimetic Theory and Middle Earth, philosophical kind of book. And so it's really interesting that he's very relaxed and casual in responding to these letters, but very insightful about really what the hobbits can teach us. They are very much people of the land and very much wanting to tend their own gardens. And only rarely, like with Frodo, do they go on an adventure, and of course with Bilbo. But mostly they stay home and they smoke pipe weed and they raise their families and they do their farming. And Matt is very, very intrigued, enamored really, as I said before, of this garden idea, this garden image. Because what that means is we treat each other as fellow workers in the field. And there is a sense for friendship to develop and to go really, really deep. And so after the work is done on the day, you sit down, you pull out some pipe weed and smoke and converse with your friend. And there is a sense where that image pervades so much of what Matthew is writing.
And you use the adjective philosophical to describe his book.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting you would notice that, Mr. Philosopher.
Yeah, it's funny. Yes. Mm-hmm.
My guest is Dan Barnett, and he writes the column in the Enterprise Record, Bibliophile. It's a weekly column, but he also teaches philosophy, and he notices things like whether a book is philosophical. You know, there's an author who's written more than one book, but his latest book was entitled Beasts of the Border, and I found that such an interesting book. Dan, what can you tell us about Scott Huber's book?
Well, as you say, it's called Beasts of the Border. And it's about a border wall between Arizona and Mexico. It's 30 feet high. Pillars are sunk in concrete 10 feet down. In 2023, the wall becomes a flashpoint for the fate of a migrant family fleeing Nicaragua, drug smugglers, Arizona ranchers, a jaguar named Solitario, and two biologists hoping to see a jag. And you put all of those things together at this wall, and you have Beasts of the Border. And it's very dramatic. It takes you into the lives of these family members, but also into the thinking of this beast. And then the ranchers, some of whom are very receptive to the immigrant family, and others are just the opposite. And all of these emotions and all of these physical events as they are attempting to surmount the wall are brought together in Scott's book.
Animals can't— we're keeping them from following their instincts as being true to their animal nature if we build a wall and don't let these animals go where they need to go, migrate.
Yeah.
It was heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was these unintended consequences that often happen. And I think that's where a novelist can really expand your mind a bit, in the sense of what are the unintended consequences. The novel can follow those things. And the reader then can say, oh, what looked like a good decision at time A, at time B may prove not to be a very good decision.
Like we used to put out forest fires. Forest fires are terrible. We can't let fires burn. And then we learn, oh, nature was doing its job, and we were interfering with what needed to happen.
Yes.
So we learn by experience, I guess.
Well, I think lightning struck, and that's how that works. And so the idea then is the novelist or the writer can help expand our understanding.
And I'm wondering if— out of all these books, that there's one that maybe we haven't mentioned from this past year that you would like to call people's attention to before we wrap up?
Well, I want to talk about Nancy Barnes's book. She and her husband Jim live near Paradise Lake, and their book is called Our Marriage, 64 Years and Counting, A Testament to Enduring Love. And it's really interesting. They're both educators, and my wife and I visited them recently, and it was just so wonderful to see their interactions after 64 years of marriage. Jim is 86, Nancy's 83, and they're both spry, and it is just really a wonder to see their interaction. And Nancy's book really is a series of very small, really vignettes about various aspects of their marriage, and very oriented toward really toward a Christian view of marriage and a sense of this is God's gift to them. There's been a lot of hardship that they've faced and dreams that didn't get realized, but there is a sense where God remains faithful. And it's really a kind of prayer, each of these vignettes, thanking God for making this love relationship possible. But, you know, we should be so fortunate to have such a long relationship and to love each other and encourage one another, even though, as I've seen, they have different mindsets. But that's the fun of bringing these two mindsets together. And so it's it really is a picture of very fun and long-term relationship.
Well, I've interviewed, and you have written reviews of a lot of books in common. That's one that I didn't have the privilege of interviewing Nancy Marie Barnes, but I have your article, clipped it out. The title of that book, again, is Our Marriage, 64 Years and Counting, A Testament to Enduring Love. And I'd like to end with that very word, love.
Hmm. Good ending.
Thank you, Dan, for coming in. And next we have a segment we call The Writer's Room, and it features writers from around the North State.
Ode to Snow Geese. We want them to bless us, but they're far away. No matter how much we beg for their cries, long to see them form cumulus clouds, then fly fast and break apart, become flying V's that flare in the sun, then disappear when they turn. But they're far away. Fields lie flooded today. Torrents come. Maybe they broke the drought. Snow geese have space. They don't need us. All water birds can spread out. Sandhill cranes find lots of mud where they forage and eat invertebrates and plants. All the ducks, pintails, shovelers, widgeons, teals, get lots of space. We beg them to come close, but they thrive in this rain-drenched world. We celebrate you, faraway birds. Thanks for this temporary hope. Paul Bounce.
For more information on the writers you've just heard, go to mynspr.org and click on the poetry link.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.